broadband internet service providers in Real Simple Syndication are proud to bring you
Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night. That over there is Carlin.
And that is Jordan.
And today I think this is the most recent pick that we've had in a while.
Yeah, probably. A 2013 film.
Called Nebraska.
Nebraska.
And this was a selection of Carlin's.
Yes. I picked this because it's a film that I'd been wanting to see. It actually just came out on Netflix very recently.
Yeah, I think it was like within the past 2 weeks or so of the time we recorded.
Yeah, the time we recorded.
Yeah.
And probably more importantly for me, the reason I wanted to see this is because I'm a big fan of the actor Bruce Dern.
Yeah.
I really like what he does. And a lot of times he plays some of characters that have the same type of traits. They're kind of more like rough around the edges, hard to deal with type people. Yeah. And I just think he does that role really well. So wanted to check out Nebraska because I know he was playing the same type of character.
Yeah, and this film, it was pretty good overall. And I think, you know, the funny thing is I was over at a brunch today with some of my girlfriend's acquaintances, and we were on our way out the door, and we mentioned that I was going to record the podcast, and one of the guys asked, oh, what is it? And we explained about, you know, the concept of the podcast, and he's like, oh, you know what film you really should do? Nebraska.
And you're like, well,
funny, sir.
You say that.
It's funny that you should say that, because we're actually on our way to go talk about it right now.
You know what that proves? We're on top of things
with this
podcast.
We are.
We are on top of them.
And I was pretty impressed that we were that on top of it, actually.
Yeah, well, we're impressive.
We are.
this film was the first hit for writer Bob Nelson.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He really doesn't have any other credits, writing credits. And, I mean, if this was his first big film, like, it was just, like, a little over a year ago, mm-hmm. So, you know.
Good for him.
Yeah, I mean, there may be more to come. But one of the things that was so perplexing to me, and it says something about, like, the film industry, is the director, Alexander Payne,
yeah,
had his hands on this script since 2002.
And he took that long to get it produced.
Well, I think it was a combination of trying to get everything in place for it to be done, but also he was working on other projects.
Yeah.
And he really wanted to be the one to direct it. So it just goes to show that, you know, it takes a long time for people to succeed in that industry. It moves slow.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are probably a lot of people out there who think that you write a script, it's deemed good, and then within like the same year the movie's made.
Yeah.
Not the case.
Not the case at all.
And in a lot of cases, scripts are out there for years and years and years before anyone even has interest in them.
And they get changed a lot.
Oh, yeah, that too.
So,
I mean, I've been hearing rumblings for years now that there's a really good Voltron script circulating, but no one's taken it yet.
Yeah, well, they're probably trying to figure out how to fit it in right now. Because I think isn't there like a Power Rangers movie that's also floating around?
Possible.
I've heard that.
I'm sure there are all sorts of scripts floating around of films that would be good.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, even if a studio purchases the film, doesn't mean it's going to get made.
Right.
There are a lot of scripts that get sold and the film never is made.
Well, I think a lot of times people, like filmmakers and studios will purchase films, the scripts that are close to other scripts that they already have in production because they don't want competition.
Yeah, that could happen.
So they're paying money to essentially bury a story that might come out later.
Which is terrible for the person who wrote it.
Well,
you know, terrible and good because
they're getting some money from it, yeah.
Right.
But let's go ahead and take a look at the Netflix summary for this, and then we'll go ahead and talk a little bit more about the details of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So when a cantankerous old boozer thinks he's won a magazine sweepstakes prize, his son reluctantly takes a road trip with him to claim the fortune. And like you said, this was directed by Alexander Payne. And Alexander Payne actually has had quite a bit of success on different projects in the past. In fact, you know, when sometimes when you hear about a film like Nebraska, it's like, oh, I wonder what else that person's done. And I felt really stupid looking it up and realizing, oh, this guy's actually been really successful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Alexander Payne, in addition to Nebraska, one of his biggest film that I recognized off of the list of from IMDb was Sideways.
Yeah, that was a big hit when it came out.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
It's also a film that is very significant for me because that was one of the first films I saw when I was on a date with my now wife.
Yeah.
So that's a movie that is very close to us because of our relationship. So, and it was a really good, well, is still a very good movie.
I really like it.
I own it, and yeah. I want to watch it again and again. It's really well done. Yeah. In addition to Sideways, though,
he's also done The Descendants, which is a
haven't seen it. Heard good things.
I've heard good things about it too. It's a George Clooney vehicle that was released in 2011. He also did
Election,
Citizen Ruth.
Did About Schmidt with Jack Nicholson in there. Yeah. That one got good reviews as well.
Yeah. So he's done a lot of respectable work, and it looks like he is very selective about what films he'll make as a director. He's done like some HBO TV shows and stuff like that as well. So good quality stuff from him. Now, in terms of
actors
on the film, like you mentioned, Bruce Dern is on this film. And, man, he has got a list.
Boss.
He's got a list.
Well, he's much older right now, yeah. You know. And he's definitely in his 70s at this point. Potentially 80s, I don't even know. But, I mean, I can try and look that up while we're talking. But he's towards the end of his life, and he's been acting for some time now. So the amount of credits he has.
He's actually 78.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But like some of the films that he has, just recently we did Django Unchained. He appeared in that. He was also in Big Love.
He is awesome in Big Love. Yeah. He plays a very difficult person.
Oh, yeah.
To deal with, and he does it so well.
And he's got a lot of credits that look like they would be right up your alley, like Swamp Devil.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good horror movie. He was in Monster, which was a very...
With Charlize Theron.
Yeah, mm-hmm, that one. That was a pretty big movie there. He was in The Glass House, All the Pretty Horses, The Haunting. Mm. He also had a role as one of the voices in Small Soldiers.
That's good.
Yeah.
You could probably go on and on and on.
Oh, yeah.
On Internet Movie Database, he has 146 acting credits.
The Burbs.
Oh, my God, that's right. Oh, he is the man in the movie The Burbs. The Burbs, that's one, and I think it's on Netflix.
Yeah, it is.
That is one we need to see and do. Oh, The Burbs so great.
Yeah. Yeah, Black Sunday.
Yeah, Bruce Stern, he does a great job.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, he does an outstanding job in this film. But I'll talk about that more as we get into the actual film.
Yeah. And then his co-star in the movie is Will Forte.
Hasn't done much.
Well, I mean, he's done a lot, like, in terms of...
Film-wise, I don't think he has.
Well, he was in Saturday Night Live, actually, for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And then he also did MacGruber.
Oh, that's right. He wasn't. I haven't seen that, but I heard it was actually not bad.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen it either. He was in the Lego Movie.
Oh, okay.
Really recently.
Haven't seen that yet, but I hear great things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I sat down with the kids to watch movies, and they're like, they told me the day before, they're like, yeah, we want to watch the Lego Movie with you. And then they changed their mind and they wanted to watch How to Train Your Dragon 2, which was a good movie too. Not knocking it at all.
Well, fortunate for us now in our lives, they are making kids' movies for grown-ups as well.
That are, yeah, pretty good. Yeah. He was also in Life of Crime in 2013. He was in Rock of Ages.
I heard that was a mess.
Yeah, I I didn't go near it. He was in The Watch.
The Watch?
Yeah.
Where is he in The Watch?
He was Sergeant Bressman.
That's right. That's right. He was in that. He did a pretty decent job.
And he was also in A Good Old Fashioned Orgy.
Oh, okay. I mean, like, you know him personally? He was involved
in
Oh, that's the name of the movie.
The name of the film. From 2011.
I thought you were saying he's a friend and he just participates in good old-fashioned orgies.
If he was a friend of mine, do you think I'd be sitting here recording a film about... recording a podcast with you? Yes. I would be sitting here with him recording a podcast with him.
I see, because I'm replaceable.
Well, no, you're not replaceable. That's not nice. Yeah. Don't take it the wrong way, my friend. It's just that you don't have inside knowledge.
I gotcha. Okay.
And he's been on, like, Aqua Teen Hunger Force you know, all sorts of stuff like that. Drawn Together. So, it seems like he's... you know what? This is something that I find personally a lot. When an actor is really good at comedy, they get pigeonholed into comedy, but they're typically a lot better at drama than a lot of people would think. And I thought that this movie was a very good dramatic movie.
It was a good dramatic movie. I personally do not think Will Forte did that good of a job.
Yeah.
Just my opinion.
I mean, He didn't do a job that poor enough to detract from the film. But he also wasn't his character wasn't very
strong.
Reactive.
Yeah.
His character was just there to almost be a vehicle for
moving the story.
Moving the story and literally getting one character from point A to point B.
Yeah.
So.
Because he was driving Bruce Dern's character.
That's right. Now, Bob Odenkirk was also in this movie.
Odenkirk,
excuse me. Yeah, and he's, of course, famous for...
The role of Sal for
Breaking Bad. And now, of course, the spinoff, Better Call Saul.
Yeah, which looks interesting. And I have to admit, I've not seen Breaking Bad, but I'm going to be watching it relatively soon.
It's a very good show. I highly recommend it. Yeah.
Got to get on that.
And then also, June Squibb, excuse me. Is the Bruce Dern's wife, Woody's wife. The character's name is Woody.
She has some great lines.
Oh my gosh.
Well, actually, no, I wouldn't say some. She has a ton of great lines.
She lights up the screen. Put it that way. But she's been in a ton of movies as well. One that looks like it would be up your alley if you're in the mood for like a sci-fi movie, sci-fi channel special. Shark Swarm.
Now, that sounds like just trying to cash in on the Sharknado ordeal, which Sharknado sucked anyway, so.
Yeah, she's appeared in House, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Judging Amy.
That's good.
ER. She was also in About Schmidt.
Oh, okay.
You know, so.
So there's a history with the director there.
Yeah, there is. Scent of a Woman.
Oh, that's a great movie right there.
Yeah, that was in 1992. Yeah. In and Out. Meet Joe Black. So she's got a pretty good film resume as well.
Yes, she does. Well, those are probably, the most important actors involved. I will say this film, nominated for the Palme d'Or at Cannes. And at Cannes, Bruce Dern, or I'm sorry, Khan, however you want to say it, Bruce Dern actually won Best Actor there. Also for the Academy Awards, it was nominated for many. It didn't win any, but it was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Bruce Dern, Best Supporting Actress, Squibb, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Cinematography.
Yeah.
And the person who did the cinematography is Faden Papamichael.
Nice.
And interestingly enough, Mr. Papamichael wanted to shoot this film in black and white. For an iconic archetypal look to accentuate the landscape.
I thought it looked great.
I thought it looked great, but Paramount, who put this film out, had a great deal of pause about it being done in black and white.
Yeah, well, I mean, because black and white is not done very often anymore.
Correct. So they actually shot in color as well.
Oh, did
just
they?
To appease Paramount, but in the end they were able to argue enough for, let us put it out in black and white, so they did it. Which, in my opinion, the black and white worked extremely well because it makes you focus on the characters.
Mm-hmm.
There's no distraction whatsoever.
Did they shoot on stock black and white, or did they shoot digitally?
Not sure. I didn't look that far into it.
Because, I mean, but... if they shot digitally, then they could have just shot in color and then desaturated.
Yeah.
Which is... I don't know if that would... That probably would actually lose some of the quality.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if that would be an approach they would take.
But I really think that the technique of using black and white... Black and white can be extremely effective, and I think in this film it was extremely effective.
It worked really well, yeah.
Because it just makes you focus on the characters. Like, you know, you're not distracted by something going on in the background or a color of something or, you know, what logo is on, you know, a bag of chips in a store.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
It removes all that from there. It's much harder to do product placement in a black and white film.
True.
But it also, one thing I think it does is that it makes the film... and I think that this, in the terms of public perception, can be a strike against it. It makes a film look more intellectual.
Yeah.
And that's not saying anything about the film, though. That's saying something about our culture as viewers.
Right.
That we look at a black and white film and we go, oh, it's black and white, so it's old. Or it's black and white, so it's trying to be artsy.
Yes. Yep.
You know,
art house.
And that's not really fair to the film.
No,
because I thought it was a very approachable film.
Yeah.
It was interesting because it's a film with a small story, but it's a very captivating story at that.
Yeah, I agree with that. It was a good script.
Yeah.
It was a
small script. Very solidly put together.
One thing I wanted to throw out there, there were other people considered for Dern and Forte's roles in this film.
Mm-hmm.
The role of Woody, which was ultimately played by Bruce Dern, other people considered for it were Rob Forster, which I don't know who Rob Forster is. I'm sorry. Gene Hackman.
Wow.
Robert De Niro.
Is Hackman... Oh, sorry. Hackman, is he still...
He retired.
Yeah.
He, when they were trying to cast this, apparently he retired not long after. Like, they were considering him. They wanted to ask him to maybe do it.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I'm retiring, so...
I'm done.
So, Robert Forster, Gene Hackman, Robert De Niro...
De Niro would have been a good choice, but
Robert Duvall,
he would have been another good choice,
and Jack Nicholson.
Well,
heavy hitters.
Nicholson has worked with Payne in the past, so that could work out. But all of them, they demand a. That's a pretty high budget rate, right?
Yes,
there.
Yes.
But
honestly, I think they all probably would have done a good job. But
mm-hmm.
I'm glad Dern was in it because I think this is his bag.
Yeah.
You know, like, that type of character is what he does extremely well.
Yeah.
So I think that was the right choice. The short list for, Forte's role, which was Dave or Davey, as he was called sometimes.
Yeah.
Matthew Modine. Casey Affleck.
Oh, he's really good.
Yeah. Paul Rudd. And Bryan Cranston.
Bryan Cranston is a very good actor.
Yes.
But again...
It's not his role.
It's not really his thing. I mean, I've been watching a lot of Malcolm in the Middle with my girlfriend. So it's interesting to see Cranston in this very comedy role.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to Breaking Bad and he's this very dark and villainous character. So something where he's just kind of a milquetoast character... would be very hard to watch.
Yeah, and I was reading, you know, doing research about this, and ultimately, like, Bryan Cranston was considered at first, but Payne, the director, said that he just didn't feel like it's a fit for Cranston.
Yeah. Yeah, I think out of the ones that you listed, Casey Affleck would have been a good choice as well.
I think Paul Rudd really could have been as well.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I would have rather seen one of them. I didn't really care for Forte... in this.
Okay, so this might sound ridiculous, but all through the movie as I'm watching it, I'm like thinking, he has a ginormous chin.
Yeah, I guess he does. I had to think for a second and, like, really remember what it looks like, but yeah, I guess he does.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it just was so pronounced on the film. I don't know why, but it just, like, I kept on looking at his chin whenever he was on screen, so...
So overall for this film, one of the things for me is it made me depressed. Because it made me like, wow, when you get old, life is horrible. Like, really horrible.
Yeah.
I actually was talking to my mom about the film because she wants to see it. She's a big Bruce Dern fan, too. Like,
oh, really?
She loves Bruce Dern. So I think it's a family thing. So I was telling her, I was like, yeah, it's a good movie, and like there's some really good comedy in it. I was like, but I was like, don't take this the wrong way, but what how it made me feel is I want to kill myself before I get too old. Is how it made me feel. Because it really conveys to you that like when you get to a certain age, like your body's just breaking down and you have nothing.
Yeah.
So you just want to like cling on to the smallest something that you have. And in this case for Woody, it's the hope that this piece of mail that says you won $1 million is legitimate.
Yeah.
So he's going to do anything he can to get to Lincoln, Nebraska to try to get his winnings that he thinks are there and nobody else believes are there.
You know, but the thing about Woody's character is that it seems like his entire life has been spent with people telling him what to do and taking advantage of him. So right. I don't know necessarily if it's something that had to do really with him being older, but, you know, the way that his life had gone, you know, the choices that he had made and everything. On one hand, you have people saying, well, he owed us a ton of money. And then you have other people saying, he really didn't owe those people money. In fact, they took advantage of his kindness.
Right.
You know?
Well, one of the things overall, and it ties into that, that I got from the film, is that everyone has their own reality.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be because of their beliefs, their mental state, their culture, like whatever.
Right.
You know, some people have a different reality because they have dementia or they have Alzheimer's. Some people have a different reality because of their culture they were brought up in.
Right.
Some people have a different reality because they live in a small town and it's very insulated, which is something you see in this film when they're in Hawthorne, Nebraska, visiting family. Like, you really get the feeling of, man, this is a small community and these people really don't leave.
No.
So their way of thinking is very different. And what they know is very different.
Yeah. It feels weird to us, especially because we live on the east coast of the United States. We live...
More populated.
One of the most populated areas in the entire world.
Yeah.
You know, the I-95 corridor from Washington, D.C., all the way up until Boston, Massachusetts, is considered to be a megalopolis. You know, it's just becoming one giant population centralization area. So when we look at a film that's about these people who live in a small area, you know, and there's not a lot going on, it feels so weird to us to look at that because everywhere we go, there's something happening. And these people in this film, like you said, they have a different reality than we do in that everything moves slower.
Much slower.
Their values are very different, especially like Dave's cousins. Their entire value system is built around how fast you can get from one point to another.
Yeah, they're idiot criminals.
Yeah, they're very unintelligent individuals.
Which I will say, one of the things that bothered me in the movie is that I thought their whole fixation on going fast was dumb. I don't think it really played well in the film.
No,
I thought it was kind of just boring.
It felt like a caricature.
Yeah, it was boring and it's just not interesting at all.
Yeah.
But that said, there were a lot of things I really enjoyed in the film. So that's just one thing.
Well,
that was not good.
And also, like, you know, when you and I get that piece of mail that says you've won $1 million,
throw it away.
We immediately throw it away.
Well, sorry, recycle it because it is paper.
Right. Well, we dispose of it appropriately.
Yes. Okay. Yes, you can put it that way.
Or if it's email, we just
trash bin.
Trash bin. Yeah, exactly. Or we
spam.
But that's because, like Dave, we'll just call him Dave. He is more familiar with today.
Yeah.
Than his father is.
A more modern society,
yeah.
A more social society.
Yeah, and also Dave is a salesman in the home entertainment department of his local electronics store. You know, so he's more savvy about how to take care of electronics, how to log into the internet probably, although you don't see that in the film.
Right.
He's shown as a very
Well adapted
person for the world that we live in today.
And Woody's the opposite. Woody's just there and he's doing his own thing and he doesn't really care about fitting in or adapting or anything like that. And I think that kind of fits into I think the overall theme of kind of like when you get older, it's more of like a whatever. Like, you don't care. Yeah. You know, it's just like, I am who I am, and what's happening is happening, and whatever.
At the beginning of the movie, I thought Woody was ridiculous. That, you know, just a character who was kind of laughable in his views on the world and where he'd been and everything like that. But then, what's interesting about the film is that it opens up more about Woody's life because you start to see the perception of other people around him.
Right.
Like, you talk to his brothers, and there's these scenes with his brothers watching television, and they're talking about things that happened. You talk to his mother, and you find out all the stories. You talk to a former girlfriend, and you find out that Woody was a bit of a rambunctious fellow, you know, and she lost out because she wouldn't let him go all around the bases. You talk to another guy, you find out that Woody was a Korea vet who was shot down and actually came out of that with post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
You know, so you find out all of these things about this character.
That makes you kind of understand where he's coming from.
Where he's coming from, and then why it's so important for him to, in his mind, get a truck and an air compressor.
Yeah. One of the strengths of this film is you really start with the view of Woody as you can't relate to him.
Yeah.
And you can't ever understand why he's such kind of an a-hole.
Yeah.
And just, like, so stubborn. But, you know, like you said, you keep getting these kind of, like, tidbits about his past and who he used to be and who he is as a person. And you start to be able to see from his point of view and be like, okay, well, now I can understand why he thinks this and why he does this. And it's strong writing.
It was. And what was so sad was that, you know, Woody seemed like a guy who was trying to do his best in whatever he could, but he felt like a failure.
Well, I think it also was making the point of, like, the times were different.
Yeah.
And there's a whole conversation that Woody has with Dave where he's kind of asking him, like, well, why did you do this in your life, and why did you do this?
Yeah.
And his answers were just like, just because.
Just because, you know? I was there.
Yeah. Right, and I think it kind of speaks to a few things. One, there were a lot more expectations for his generation of, this is how you conduct yourself, and right, this is what you do in your life. And it was more of a societal thing where you just follow that.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of pressure to follow that. Nowadays, it's much different because it's more of about individualism and do your own thing and be free and all that kind of stuff. It's a societal thing, and it changes over time, and it's going to continue to change over time. But one of the other things about it is he felt like trapped,
yeah,
in things. And most importantly seen when he kind of asked him why he got married, and he was just like, because I just figured, what the hell.
Right.
So
she wanted to, and I'm
he
just like,
let things yeah. happen in his life. And I think part of that too is because back then things were less stressful. You kind of did do a little more of, like, go with the flow type stuff.
Yeah.
Because if you think about then versus now, there are a lot more things to worry about nowadays.
You have to make so many choices.
Make tons of choices from a consumer standpoint, from a financial standpoint, as far as, like, managing money, doing stocks. Like,
yeah,
if you're doing that, like, manage a 401k, you know, you have to be thinking about a career. You have to do more work at work because
yeah.
employers are trying to squeeze more and more and more out of you. You have to do more schooling. You have to do, there's just more and more and more and more to do.
Well, even now, even if you don't have kids, you have to think about the potential of having children,
right,
the potential of how you're going to get those kids through the education that they're going to need, and you have to realize that the education levels that we have now, while exorbitant, are going to be a drop in the bucket compared to when the next generation goes to college.
Which, honestly, I think this all shows how having more information available and being able to educate more,
yeah,
can be a bad thing in a sense, because then it prompts you to try to plan more, yeah, to try to do more,
yeah,
and there just isn't necessarily the time, and it just causes more stress, and it breaks people. So you look back and you see how Woody was just kind of like, yeah, I just went with it. I just did it because
we did it. Yeah.
Like, what else are you going to do? That's just what you did. And you hear a lot of that, actually, if you talk to people from older generations. Like, they'll kind of be like, well, that's just what you did back then.
Right. Like, I know my grandfather was a migrant worker. Like, back in the 50s, he would go from farm to farm, and he would begin to, like pick the plants that were growing there. He would help with harvesting and then move on to the next farm and things like that. You know, and then, you know, what's socially expected of you? You get married. You settle down. You have kids. So he moves. He gets married. He moves down closer to Houston where the ports are, and he gets a job as a trucker. And him and my grandmother stayed together their entire lives, even though I know for a fact that he was not very happy towards the end of his life.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did, but he didn't have the same kind of social release that we have in our generation, where we say, well, you're in a bad relationship, why don't you just leave?
Right.
You know?
It was different. The other thing is, divorce was significantly more frowned upon back then.
Right.
People just kind of, like, did not divorce.
Right.
And nowadays, it's actually becoming pretty commonplace.
Well, that's an interesting thing, is that for a long time, divorces was a steadily rising rate, but it seems now, from the research that I've been reading, that divorce has actually been tapering off.
Right.
You know, and over the past 5 or 10 years, it seems like it's actually declining.
I think part of that might end up being because people are, it's more of a societal thing now for people to get to a place where they feel mentally and financially comfortable or whatever, and be able to say, okay, now I can look for a mate, now I can get married. Whereas in previous generations, it was more of a...
It's 18, time to get married.
Right, yeah, you get married younger and you have kids, and, yeah. You know, it was more of like a, all right, better get to work because this is what's expected.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of more of like a, go ahead and figure out what you legitimately want, and then make that decision and be with someone.
Yeah, which... I can see the advantages and disadvantages of both.
Right.
I feel, looking at Woody's situation, his wife...
Oh, God. I mean, that's a mess.
I don't know if I could be in that kind of situation, honestly. No. As a guy in a situation married to someone of that strong of a personality who really seemed to hate you.
Yeah, she just lambastes him verbally all the time.
You know, but here's an interesting thing, is she will fight on him and henpeck him and pick him to death all the way up until the point where somebody else will.
Oh, yeah, no.
And then she steps in and is his strongest defender.
Well, that happens all the time.
Yeah, it does.
With people. Like, I know when I was in college, you know, we had a group of friends, and you always have, like, that one asshole friend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you have one asshole friend. But
I'm that
your
guy.
But they're your friend, and you like them.
Right.
So you make fun of them and you call them out on stuff, but when someone else does it, you're like, hey, he's an asshole, but he's our asshole.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, that mentality. And I think that's what you're getting here. Like, yeah. His wife's like, he's an asshole, he's worthless, but he's mine. Yeah. You know, like, he's my asshole. I'm the one who's allowed to say those things to him. If anyone else says it, I'm going to get defensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And it was interesting to see their dynamic, because I do think that on one level, while they can't stand each other, I do think that those characters did care for each other quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Well, and you see this with people. As time goes on in marriages, if you don't address issues and move past them, then things just fester in general, and it leads to that kind of contentious nature.
Yeah. Yeah, and...
I see it with people that I know.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is that you don't realize that you're letting something fester until it's too late.
Well, because you... And you hear this from people a lot, actually, especially people who have been married for a while. They'll say, well, yeah, I figured that wasn't worth fighting over.
Right.
You know, and it's like, the best thing that you could do is have the conversation and be adults and work through things together.
Yeah.
But a lot of people take the stance of, well, I'd just rather not make a fight out of it because it's just I'll just let it go. But the thing is, you don't actually let it go. And the other person doesn't really let it go.
Well, and a lot of times the other people don't realize that they're offending you.
Right. Well, you know? Yeah, that happens too.
You know, because what's the... You could think, this person is deliberately doing something to annoy me. Like, in the movie, Woody's wife says at one point, all he does is sit there, I do all the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's very angry at him for his... lack of response to anything,
yeah.
You know, but she doesn't realize, and Woody doesn't seem to realize that he's being unresponsive towards his wife. He's in his own world of...
That's his reality.
Of pain and misery. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's his reality.
Yeah.
And her reality is different.
Yeah, her reality is that he doesn't care about anything that happens in their life.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting how, the character of Dave is kind of like, he realizes that's like his reality. So he's kind of like, look, how much longer is he going to be around? I'll just let him do what he's going to do, go through the motions, figure things out on his own with in regards to this, you know, money that's not actually there.
Right.
And it'll be done, you know? Like, why fight him on this when it's kind of not worth it? Just let him have something.
Well, we have at least two different hospital visits, so...
Yeah. He, like, whacks his head pretty good.
And Dave winds up purchasing a new truck and a air compressor that he probably doesn't have the money for.
Yeah.
But anyway, but...
And I liked when he lost his teeth.
Yeah, that was kind of... out there looking for his teeth. That was pretty funny. Oh, look, I found your teeth. These aren't my teeth. These are somebody else's.
Yeah.
What do you mean these are somebody... I'm Joe... And that was hilarious.
Well, the thing about the comedy in this is it's believable comedy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's dialogue-driven comedy, and you could see people saying all of these things. And that's what I like, because many times in films, you get dialogue comedy or other types of comedy, and you're like, that's funny, but that's not realistic. Like, that would never actually happen. With this movie, I really find myself being like, that's funny, and I could totally see that happening in real life. And it's a skill to be able to write that way.
Oh, yeah.
And I applaud Bob Nelson for being able to do that.
Yeah.
Good job, Bob. And that rhymed. Even better.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and that's, for me, the biggest strength of the film. The comedic moments were believable and quite funny. I mean, there's a lot. And obviously, you know, Woody's wife, what's her name in it? Did they even say?
They do say at one point, but I'm kind of blanking on it. Let me look it
up. We'll just say Woody's wife. So Woody's wife, she gets all the best lines.
Oh,
okay, not all the best, because Bruce Dern as Woody, he gets some really good lines, but she gets more good lines, which honestly, I don't think she did a great job with her acting. I just think that people think that she did a great job because of the lines she was delivering.
Yeah.
Because the lines were so well done.
Yeah.
She, no filter. She has no filter.
That character has no filter at all.
Well, neither did Woody.
Her name was Kate.
Oh, Kate, that's right, yes.
Okay. But you know what? I think, honestly, probably that role was a lot of fun to take.
Yeah, well, sure.
You know, because a lot of times you don't get to cut loose like that. And her character was just one expletive after another. We'll just put it that way. And when she wasn't saying something foul, she was doing something that was foul.
Yeah. Oh, one of the other things I had forgotten to kind of touch on that I'd like to is when I was talking about the whole, like, people having different realities.
Yeah.
It's interesting how in the end of the film, because Dave goes out and gets that truck for Woody and gets that compressor.
Yeah.
And it lets him drive through Hawthorne when they're leaving. Him getting the $1 million becomes a reality to the people in that town.
Right.
Even though it didn't actually happen.
Yeah, and the great thing is that they spent, like, the entire time that Woody is in Hawthorne visiting his family, he's treated like a celebrity by these people in the town because they really think that he won $1 million.
And Dave's trying to tell people he didn't actually win $1 million. But then in the end, he's the one who's like, well, let's make him think
that.
Won $1 million because it means so much to Woody.
It does. And, you know, that was the greatest thing he could have given his father at that point. And I thought, I loved that ending.
Yes, I did too. The moment where he's driving through Hawthorne.
Wearing a hat that says...
Winner.
Winner.
Yeah.
It says winner on it.
Yeah. You know? And Dave Duck, he has Dave Duck down so it can't be seen. So it looks like he's driving by himself in style. He goes out on top in Hawthorne. Because here's the thing. He hadn't been seen there for a long time.
And his reputation was as, you know, the guy who was a boozer, the guy who owned the shop but always was loaning money to people and working on cars for free, you know. So his reputation was that of a loser.
Yeah, he was nothing.
Yeah.
And by, you know, driving through, even though he didn't get the money, all these people believe, wow, he became something.
He got something.
Yeah, he's someone now.
Yeah.
And that, being able to have that in his head, Woody, being able to think that and be like, you know, there's a whole town of people who think that I'm on top. That's enough for him.
Yeah.
And it's good that Dave recognized this is what he needs.
And honestly, not to get too judgmental or preachy, but wouldn't it be nice if everybody's life was in such a way that we could be, you know, honored by something as simple as that.
Yeah, because it was simple.
You know, it's so simple, you know, to just make somebody look good, you know.
That's true.
And sometimes it might cost you on some pride. It might cost you like some money like it did for Dave, but it was in the long run something that was inconsequential.
Yeah.
You know, but it made Woody so happy, you know, and it probably, you know, like we said, this character's in his physical decline. He doesn't look like he's going to live much longer. So this is something that he's going to cherish for however long he has left.
And mood is everything.
Oh, yeah.
A person's mental outlook, it's everything.
Yeah.
Well, and this goes back to the whole, like, reality thing is that, you know, some things mean nothing to people, and that same thing can mean everything to someone else.
Yeah.
And this is that perfect example. Like, you know, Dave at first is like, why do you want this truck and why do you want this air compressor? Like, there are bigger things in life, but to Woody, it's everything at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I think that's something that, you know, we as people really should respect and understand about everyone around us is that everybody has different values, everybody has different wants and needs and goals, and to like poo-poo what someone is interested in or wants is, you know, causing them some sort of pain, you know, or just making them feel less important.
Well, and also, I almost would like to see a postscript for Dave because...
What he does.
Well, because especially early in the movie, it's presented that Dave has been pursuing a relationship with a woman... and
who moved out.
She moves out because Dave isn't willing to give her a commitment.
Right.
So how does this new found respect for his father, you know, by giving him something as simple as a truck and an air compressor and a ride through his hometown, how does he look to this relationship that he has to try and fix that and try and, you know, affirm for her? If he really wants that relationship, it might be that he decides that the relationship is not something that's really good for him.
Well,
but
because if you think about it, at that moment where, you know, you're assuming they had, where she was like, "Look, I'm gonna move out if we're not gonna get married."
Right.
His father Woody would have said, "Oh, okay,
fine."
Because why the hell not? Like, well, that was the whole point. Is like he's just like, "Well, why'd you get married to mom?" Well. Why the hell not?
Yeah, okay. it's kind of like,
it's the same thing with having the kids.
Exactly.
Why the hell not, I figured, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just interesting to see that juxtaposition.
Exactly.
You know, they're different. They're very different. But in the end, they come together to, you know, work for what Woody needs mentally. The air compressor incident in this film.
Oh, this
hilarious!
The theft of the air compressor.
Yeah, they're taking it and they think it was the one guy's. I forget what it. Ed.
Yeah,
Ed's. The villain of the movie, which I thought he did a good acting job.
Yeah,
that guy.
Eddie Boy.
Yeah, so he they think they're like stealing his compressor, which was Woody's compressor back, and then it's the Weston.
It's another family.
Westonvilles or something.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, they're so nice. And it was just so hilarious how it played out, how like the parents watched their kids steal it and didn't say, this isn't who you think it is.
Until they get back into the car.
Yeah, and then they're like chiding them for it. They're like, we don't understand why you do that. They're such nice people. And they're like, well, you didn't tell us.
Exactly.
I mean, Jesus.
And then like they're trying to, they have to bluff their way out of this situation because they come home.
Yeah.
You know, and the you know, they're grown men, but the boys are hiding in the farm, and the parents have to drive away. You know, like we just stopped by. No, we don't want to come in. We'll just leave now. Yeah. You know, it was funny.
Now, and that's a case where it's like very active comedy.
Yeah.
But there are also instances in this film of very passive comedy, like when all the guys are hanging out in the main room watching football, and like no one, like everyone's barely talking to each other. They're just kind of sitting there and just like talking about someone's car.
Do you have that Buick from 79? It wasn't a Buick, it was a Chevy.
Yeah.
That's right.
And it just plays like it's nothing, but it's comedy, and it is funny because that's kind of how...
That's how conversations between men of that generation go.
Yeah, exactly. It's very superficial. It's very boring and kind of pointless.
And all the women are sitting in the kitchen talking about who had the baby.
Gossiping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, the film doesn't do a lot of favors to these characters because they do show them in that particular stereotype. Yeah. But it is a stereotype because there is a certain amount of reality to that.
Yeah. Well, and one of my favorite moments is one of these kind of passive comedy things where they're... it's when Woody and Dave first visit the family members in Hawthorne.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there on the couch and they're just talking about, you know, like real superficial catching up type stuff. And Woody's brother is watching TV while they're talking and he's like... Someone says to him, you doing good? Are you doing well? And he goes, no. And that's it.
Yeah, and that's it.
And it's just like, no, and there's nothing else. Like, no one asks, oh, what's wrong? And he doesn't offer up any additional information. It just played so hilarious.
Yeah, it does. And also, you kind of get the thought that, oh, we're really not a family that talks about problems.
Well, I think it's also kind of the stage in his life where he's just kind of like, I got nothing going on.
And he doesn't care about being brutally honest.
Which is, you know, what I was talking about in the beginning, watching this film, just makes me like, I'm going to end it before I get too old, because this movie makes it look like getting really old is horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible.
Well, I think it is what you make it.
That's true. But there is another reality that comes up in this movie, and that's that as people get older, they become burdens on their children.
Yeah, I mean... And that's
inevitable, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I think about a lot. My parents are still relatively young, but I think about, you know, how am I going to take care of them when they're older? Because I am the oldest son, and there is that expectation that the oldest child is going to take care of the parents,
right?
You know, and also I'm the one who lives closest to home. Both of my adult sisters have moved out of state. So there is this kind of weird juxtaposition of my parents are young enough where I don't really have to worry about it.
But eventually,
like in 10, 20 years, I am going to have to worry about that. And when I do have to worry about that, I'm going to be in my 40s and 50s just like they are right now. So it's weird because, you know, if I do have kids... I'm going to be having kids after my 30s, so that means that as I'm worrying about my parents, I'm also going to be worrying about my children's college education.
Right.
You know, so there's... I think about a lot of this stuff when I'm driving to and from places, and it really does worry me, you know? Yeah.
And when your parents get much older, maybe you'll think of watching the movie Nebraska and say, hey, let me get them that truck and that air compressor.
I would hope so. I mean, my parents I think my parents are good people, you know.
Well, I would hope that kids think their parents are good people.
Well, I mean, sometimes it doesn't.
No, that's work true. Out that way. That's true.
But you know, I hope that when I am at the place in my life where I need to take care of my parents, I don't see it as a burden.
Right.
You know?
But the reality is, even if people don't view it that way, in some way it is a burden,
yeah.
financially
oh, yeah.
or time-wise, you know?
It, well, and also...
It happens.
And the horrible thing is that in this economy, in this day and age, saving for retirement is so hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're like,
it is.
You need to put aside X amount of money and you need to have like $500,000 saved up to
yeah.
really retire. It's like, who has that kind of money?
Well, we're getting to a point where no one's really going to be able to retire anyway. And the other thing is we
yeah.
have Social Security that everyone pays into. And eventually it's going to be gone.
Well, it's failing right now.
Right, exactly. So, you know, it just makes it harder.
Yeah.
And,
oh,
and
yeah.
that's just the way it goes.
It is. It is.
That's what's happening. One thing I was thinking about while you were talking about that is how we used to be socially... At a point where it was more acceptable, and some cultures it still is, to have multiple generations living together.
Yes.
One of the problems why the perception is it's a burden to take care of people is because we have such a focus now on independence.
Yeah.
Like, the kids need to get out of the house and need to go live their own life, do their own thing. But if it was still the old social way where generations all live together, it would be different. It wouldn't be... I don't think it'd be so much as looking at it as a burden. It's just that... You know, this is what life is, and it's natural, and,
yeah.
you know, it's a duty, just like
yeah.
going to work,
well,
something you do.
Yeah, and that's something that I think is so sad, is that, you know, we look at, like you said, independence as this thing that must be achieved.
It's so destructive.
Oh, my goodness.
It's so destructive to society, because people become so detached from one another.
Yeah.
And then the caring stops.
You know, and then you look at it, and... like Dave's brother, I can't remember his name in the film.
Yeah, I don't
know. But he feels trapped by his family.
Yes, he does.
And it's very obvious that he feels trapped by his
yes.
family. So when he goes to Hawthorne to see all of them, it seems like it's something that's grudging that he does. But then everybody's like, "Oh, where's your wife and daughters?" And he's like, "Oh, there's some dance thing." Which means he didn't even care about making his family a priority.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I can understand doing things for your kids, but you've got to find a balance. There's got to be this balance of making your life about not just your kids. And I think that's a trap that we fall into a lot in our society, is that we think that our children are our end all and be all.
Right.
But then we push them out of the nest and say, "You're 18, we're done with you." And then when they're 20 years down the line, we want you to take care of us.
Yeah.
They've been told, "No, everything's about me now. Don't come asking for any handouts."
Yeah. yeah. No,
you know,
I hear you.
It's a sad thing.
It's weird the way things have changed with our society, and it's destroying some things big time. So, I don't know. It sucks. It really sucks.
It does. It does.
One thing I do want to say about the film that I forgot to say before, I think the black and white kind of sets a solemn mood
for
the film.
Yeah, and it also kind of makes it a little timeless.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I agree with that. I think if it was in color, in addition to taking a little bit of focus away from the characters, I think it would also lighten the mood a
yeah.
tad bit, which may or may not be a good thing, because, like I said, you know, it got me pretty depressed at times.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think that's just kind of the subject matter.
Yeah, yeah. Mortality, aging, holding on to a wish that you hope can come true. It's
no
a very
matter
somber,
how small it is.
Exactly. It's a very somber movie. But one thing that always brought up the levity was watching Bruce Dern's pee into a cornfield.
Yeah.
Because that happened, like, what, 5 times?
Bruce Dern was so awesome in this movie. Like, I honestly feel like everybody paled in comparison severely to his acting in it.
Yeah. Beer ain't drinking.
Yeah, beer ain't drinking, that's right. I assume he was talking about, like, doing some hard stuff, like drinking whiskey or something.
Yeah,
that's drinking.
That's drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just a beer is not a alcoholic problem.
According to Woody. That's how Woody
The Gospel
lives.
According to Woody, beer ain't drinking.
That sounds like a good follow-up film. The Gospel According to Woody. Or a book, whatever.
I think that would be a good one. But it's also interesting when you look at the director's work. Another one of his films, Sideways, deals heavily with alcohol and the wine tasting culture. Subculture.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have another character whose life has been horribly impacted by his use of alcohol as a means of self-medication. So it might be, I need to see more of the director's work, but that might actually be a larger theme in his projects that he looks for.
Yeah, possible. Never know. I don't think it's an election, though.
No, I
don't. I haven't seen that movie. I hear good things. It's like, I know it's got a, what's her name? Someone Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah.
And Matthew Broderick. I know they're in it. And fans, I'm good.
Yeah. So, Carlin, why don't we go ahead and talk about our final assessments for this film?
Why don't we? Do you want me to go first?
I'll go ahead and go first.
All right, go ahead.
Obviously, we kind of had a downer moment while we were talking about this film.
I think we had a few downer moments during this, but that's the tone of the film.
It's the tone of the film, but it also had some moments of whimsy.
Yes.
And some moments where you got to cheer for the characters, like when Dave punched Eddie.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic catharsis.
Yes, I agree.
And then of course, you know, the air compressor, the truck driving through Hawthorne is just such a great way to end the film. And you know, it really took a dark subject matter and something that was really tough to watch and turned it around and made you realize that Dave saw, and through Dave we saw, that we should think of the people around us and how we can make sure that we affirm them. You know, and so for a tough message but a positive message, for the emotional palette that was shown, like with the amount of range from, you know, crazy ranting grandma to you know, Woody just trying to make it through the day and hold on to his dream of having $1 million so he can leave something to his kids. You know, that to me just really pushed this movie really well. And I'm going to go ahead and give this one a 4-star rating.
Okay. I liked the film. I think it was a well-crafted piece of work. Black and white, like I said, very good choice. It really makes you focus on the characters themselves.
Yes.
I loved Bruce Dern in this, obviously. I've said that numerous times. But I think part of the problem becomes he's so strong and not anyone... No one else around him was strong enough to hold up.
Right.
So therefore, it makes everybody's bad acting look worse. I know that the director, Alexander Payne, one of the reasons he ultimately chose Will Forte is because he believed Forte, his looks looked like he could be related to Bruce Dern.
I thought that, yeah.
And I would say in that case, you should go with talent over looks, because I would much rather seen either Paul Rudd or Casey Affleck in that role. Nothing against Will Forte, like I think he does fine in other things, but
mm-hmm.
this wasn't for him,
yeah.
In my opinion. That said, the script was well done. It was a dark comedy, but the comedy, you know, like I said, it was believable for real life.
Yes.
Dialogue, so good. Like I said, it had active and passive comedic moments, which I liked. The drama was depressing, which, you know, here's the thing. If a film can make you feel something you don't want to feel,
yeah,
it's done well.
Yeah.
And that's my opinion. Love the ending of this film. Love the way it's done. It's nothing extremely new, but it gives you some good thoughts, some things to think about even after the film's finished,
yeah.
Which I do appreciate. I'm not going to go as high as Jordan, but I will give this 3.5 stars. I do think it is good and worth recommending to people. And damn, Bruce Dern, you're the man.
Yeah.
You're the man.
So 3.75 stars for...
pretty good.
For Nebraska. And I think that's one of our best showings in a long time.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. Probably since Let the Right One In.
Let the Right One In was like 4.75,
yeah,
I think.
That was a high one.
High.
Yeah. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. We hope you have a great week. Hope you enjoy some good movies. Let us know if you do, so that we'll know to watch those and make sure that they get rated appropriately on the podcast.
And we can attribute them to you on the podcast.
Absolutely. So if you want to be internet famous.
Yeah, internet famous. What's that like?
It's a thing.
It is a thing. Maybe that's the only thing you really want in life, because that's all you got to live for. Like Woody. It's your truck and air compressor.
You know what? The thought of that is a really kind of taking my breath away. You know, that's a lot of responsibility you're putting on us right now.
That's cool. We can be the Dave to your Woody. It's all good.
You've been listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Our theme music was provided by Sweet Wave Audio. To find more royalty-free music for your own projects, check out sweetwaveaudio.co.uk.
And special thanks to Ariana Ramos for her graphic design savvy helping us with our album art.
Visit our website at mostexcellentmovienight.com to listen to other episodes, give us your opinion, and share with us other movies you'd like to have reviewed.
You can also contact us through our email address, mostexcellentmovienight@gmail.com. We would love to read them on the air.
Also, if you could rate and review the podcast on iTunes, we would be your friends for life.
For sure. That's all for now. Thanks for listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night,
where movies are most excellent.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.